Of Artificer Creation.
Welcome to episode 146 of the Let's Talk Photography podcast. I'm your host, Bart Bouchotz, and this is the show for November 2025. Phone cameras don't change that much every year, but those changes really do add up over two or three. So in this show, I want to illustrate this point in general with my experiences upgrading from an iPhone 15 Pro Max to a 17 Pro Max. I haven't updated my phone every year in a very long time, and I also prefer to keep these shows a little bit agnostic. I like to keep the shows very platform agnostic. But do you know something? The change I've experienced in going from my 2-year-old iPhone 15 Pro Max to my shiny brand new and very orange iPhone 17 Pro Max, I'm kind of impressed at the level of improvement and how much more I'm enjoying photographing with this phone. And I liked photographing with my iPhone 15, so, you know, I think there's a topic here. I also think it's important to realize that it's okay for me to give my first-hand experience in iPhone land, because I know that while the specifics of exactly what changed, exactly in what way, are going to be different, the level of improvement is almost certainly very similar on the other high-end phones. So I think that if you take a 2-year jump from the, you know, high-end Google Pixel line to its equivalent 2 years later, I think you're going to notice a real difference in the camera. I also think you're going to notice a real difference if you take a high-end Samsung Galaxy from 2 years ago and switch to the same one from now. I think, again, it's going to be a massive experience boost. So I don't think that what I'm going to talk to you about today is that different to what people are going to be experiencing, no matter what phone they like to use. Although, obviously, the actual specifics are very much iPhone, well, specific, really. But, you know, I still think it's a conversation I want to have. And it's my show, so if I want to stretch my definition of platform agnostic a bit, well, I can. The first thing to say is, it's more than just the obvious stuff, right? Let's just get it out of the way now. Yep, everything is a little bit better. The whole interface is a little bit faster. The screen is a little bit nicer. There's a little less lag, saving complicated images like night mode shots, which is kind of useful, actually. And all the improvements in the machine learning, along with the sort of natural evolution of sensor technology, means that, yeah, all of my final images look a little bit nicer. If any of that hadn't have been true, I'd have been disappointed. That's not actually the bit I find interesting. Oh, look, technology is improving. That's, you know, dog bites man. But what I was surprised at is that there's more going on than just similar but better. There are two changes in particular that have actually had a meaningful impact on how I take photographs with my phone. So the first of these I want to talk to you about is, technically speaking, me playing catch-up. Because the advantage of jumping multiple years at once is that you don't just get one set of improvements, you get a few. And the only reason I vaguely considered breaking my rule and upgrading 2 years in a row last year was the addition of a really powerful-looking hardware camera control button. And it was actually spookily similar to what I described in Let's Talk Photography 132, which was my phone camera wish list. Now, I had recorded that just in the lead up to Apple's expected September event every year, so I guess it was sort of wish casting. But I made it very clear I wasn't predicting, I was wish casting. And well, I should have pretended I was predicting, because I would have sounded pretty much like a prophet, because when Apple released and what I described in the abstract were awfully similar. So I nearly upgraded, and then I thought better of it. And I spent the last year watching other people experiment with camera control without actually being able to try it for myself. And I certainly had very high hopes for the feature, but watching people I trust and respect give it a, you know, a genuinely honest try and then abandoned it, well, that, you know, muted my expectations a little bit. But I'm not going to bury the lead. I actually do like it. And what's actually more important is I actually use it. But I did need to tweak the settings to make it actually useful for me, which I think is a very important point. And I think that probably actually illustrates a much bigger sort of issue here, is I think a lot of people are disappointed because camera ergonomics are just deeply personal. We all shoot in different ways. You know, different shooting styles mean that different settings are important. Different people prefer to hold their phones in different ways. Different people prefer, you know, we're just so different as photographers that I actually don't think any one method for controlling the camera could ever be perfect for everyone. So maybe I shouldn't have been surprised that a whole bunch of people went cold on the feature. But I do think that there's enough configuration in there that it might still prove useful to more people who may not have given it enough. They may have given it a really honest try with the default settings. And I wouldn't have got very far with the default settings. I probably would have stopped using it. But you don't have to accept the defaults. And I think that's an important takeaway for me anyway. I still don't think everyone's going to like this feature. But I do think maybe there's a few people who might be able to give it a second try. I don't know. We shall see. Or they shall see. Anyway, the important thing to point out is that what Apple provided and what they branded camera control is not just a button. Right? Other vendors beat Apple to providing a simple hardware button to launch the camera and take a photo. Right? Apple did let you do that using the action button, but not until after other people had done it first with an actually dedicated button. Now, Apple, I think, were quite right with the action button that some people think the camera is the most important feature in the phone. So therefore, if there's going to be a hardware button, they wanted to do that. Other people never take a picture with their phone. And if there's going to be a hardware button, they'd rather have the ability to make it do something that's useful to them. Some people use it to silence calls. Some people use it to turn on the flashlight. Some people use it to launch an automation. You can do anything you want with the action button, and that's not a bad thing. But, you know, a button to take the photo, well, okay, it lets you launch the camera, but I could already use my volume buttons as a shutter, so the action button never excited me that much. Actually, I didn't even have it set up on the phone, or for the camera. I had it set up as the mute feature. Because it wasn't all that exciting. A button you push. Yeah, like I say, it didn't really blow my dress up, as Alison would say. But camera control isn't just a button. What it actually is a small capacitive touch-sensitive strip. So the quote-unquote button can actually detect two levels of pressure. So sort of a normal click and a sort of a half click. And it's touch sensitive, so it can detect a swipe up or a swipe down. So you actually have four interactions with that button. Click, half click, swipe up and swipe down. Or left and right, depending on whether you have the camera oriented one way or the other. And I think when Apple first launched camera control back with the iPhone 16 on day one, the default behavior was to enable all of these click, half click, swipe and all of it, to enable all of the gestures by default. And what happened is that regular folk who just wanted a button to quickly take a picture of baby Johnny being cute, but just pushing the button and pushing it again, had weird things happen when they would end up accidentally swiping or half pushing or whatever. And it seemed to actually be a bug, not a feature, for a lot of people. And at some point between that very first day launch and now, Apple have changed the default, and now the default behavior for camera control is basically the same behavior we got from the action button when it was configured to be the camera. Click the thing once to open the camera app, click it again to act as a shutter. And I think for a lot of people, a lot of the time, that's actually all they want. But if you're a photographer first and a phone user second instead of the other way around, then you should, I think, at least try to go in and enable camera controls superpowers. In other words, enable those advanced modes. And I don't think Apple intended this, but an interesting side effect of moving the advanced capabilities into an opt-in feature is that in order to actually opt in, you have no choice but to enter the part of the camera settings labeled camera control. And what you will notice is that there is more than just the toggle. And you can't not notice this because you're looking for the toggle, and what you will find instead is a toggle and a customize menu. And that immediately tells everyone who turns the thing on that they don't have to accept the defaults. I think that's very good that you can't turn it on without realizing you can configure it. So before I describe how I made it work for me by configuring it, let me describe what it does by default. And its default behavior is do everything. Right? That's the simple summing up of its default behavior. So when you toggle it into advanced mode and you use the camera control, then it still does the basics just like it did before. Fully press the button once, open the camera, fully press it again, it's the shutter button. Right, so no change there. That's a good thing. But you now have the ability, the camera app on the phone now has a concept of a current setting. And you can half press to enable a little menu or sort of a little slider to appear straight underneath the physical button. Like it sort of almost flows out of the button when you half press. And that will show you a scale for whatever setting it is that the phone thinks is my current quote unquote set or my quote unquote current setting. And then you swipe up and down or left and right on the camera control to move that current setting in one direction or the other. And this is already useful, but the extra thing you can do then, which is a bit I find very fiddly, is if you double half press, the little scale changes from the scale for the current setting to a selector to allow you to change the phone's concept of the current setting, so that then when you do your swiping and stuff, the setting becomes, what you're changing becomes this other thing. And so basically you double half press and then you swipe to change which setting is current, and you can either half press again to immediately select it or just dwell for a few seconds on a specific setting, and then that becomes the current setting, and then the scale you see changes to your new setting, and then you can swipe to start changing that setting. And like I say, the half click I have no problem with, the swiping I have no problem with, the double half clicking I struggle with because I have a terrible tendency to be a little too eager on the first of the two half clicks and end up firing the shutter. Or maybe it's the second one, I'm not entirely sure. Either way, the end result is I usually end up taking a photograph I don't want instead of getting the little menu for choosing the settings. But I'm getting better. But even as I get better, it's still fiddly. It's going to be fiddly for me always. It just is fiddly, in my opinion. Or to me, it is fiddly. Other people's experiences, I am sure, varies. Right, so that's the default behavior. So what can you change? Well, the first thing is you don't have to choose between all the features or none of the features. You can actually toggle on the different gestures. So if you find the double half click so fiddly as to be a total and complete and utter waste, whereas I just find it to be mildly annoying, you can actually turn it off so the double half click thing doesn't work at all. And then you can only really get to control one setting, I presume. I never did toggle it off because it was fine by me. But that means that you actually don't have a choice between just basic features or all the features. You can actually be on a spectrum between the default behavior and the fully advanced behavior, which is interesting. But even if you leave all the gestures on, I think the more important thing you can do is you can control that second level list of settings. So you can control what it is that you can swipe between when you double half press. And that means that any setting in there that you don't give a monkey's about because it's not relevant to your style of photography, you can make it not be in the list. So you can really shrink the list down. Better still, you can reorder the list so that the settings you want are all the settings you want most often are near the top of the list. And in fact, you should do this because the setting you put at the top of the list is the default setting. So if 90% of the time you want to change one thing and only 10% of the time do you want something else, by putting your setting up to the top, you almost never have to do the double half click thing because your setting will be the default when you half click and the little scale shows up. So that in itself actually would have been great for me just to be able to choose the default. But actually, I never use things like the camera styles or whatever they're called. So they were in there. I was like, no, you can go away. I basically ended up reducing it down to, I mean, 99% of the time, the only thing I want is to change the zoom level. But I don't actually want an infinity scroll, which you can have. There's an option in there to zoom basically through all of the possibilities. But I actually don't want to zoom like that continuously. I want to jump between the optical quality modes. And so there's actually a separate setting. So there's one setting Apple called Zoom, which is your swipe to all the zoom levels. And there's one setting Apple calls Cameras, which jumps you between the 0.5, the 1, the 2, the 4, the 8. And if you try to go quote-unquote wider than the 0.5, you actually flip to the front-facing camera. I wish you could disable that sub toggle within this bigger slider, because I actually never want to go to the front-facing camera. I don't need to see myself, thank you very much. So I kind of wish I could take that one off the list too. But anyway, what I end up with is when I half press, I can just swipe to go. Swipe one way to go to 0.5 because the default lens is the 1x, and swipe the other way to go to 2, 4 and 8. And that's perfect. That's what I want to do most of the time, and it just works. The other thing I sometimes want to do is exposure compensation, now that that's a thing we can actually do on the iPhones. So when I do the double half press gesture and swipe once, I switch to exposure compensation. And very, 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 very rarely I want to mess around with the depth of field in camera to experiment with something in the field. And so I decided after much procrastination that I would leave one other setting available to me in that double half press menu, which is the depth of field setting. And I may yet turn that off because I'm not using it very often. Because actually I prefer to do that in post when stuff isn't jiggling around. I think it's much easier to do that in post than to do that, you know, in the field. But anyway, having reordered, first of all, that's the single most important thing, so that the camera selector is my default, I now almost never have to do the fiddly double click or double half tap gesture. And then the fact that I was able to get everything out of that menu I didn't want meant that when I do the fiddly double half tap, I almost never get the wrong thing anymore, because there's almost no chance of me ending up with the wrong thing, because 99% of the time, all I want to do is double half tap swipe once. And that's easy enough to do. And I can do that pretty reliably, actually, it turns out. Way more reliably than I could navigate it while it was full of all the other stuff I don't give a monkey's about. So I definitely do think that if you're finding it fiddly, spend some time in those settings. And I hope it makes as big a difference as it did for you. Because for me, it literally flipped it from a disappointment to, oh, this is actually really nice. I won't say at the must-have feature, that will be a lie. It's not a must-have feature. I could still do without it. But you know something? I'd be cranky if I had to. It's gone from a feature that's a genuine nice to have that I would miss, which is not bad going, because initially it was just saying, oh, I wanted this to be great. And ooh, fiddly. But now that I've tweaked it, not fiddly, genuinely useful. Another very pleasing surprise to me is I knew academically that Apple had said that case manufacturers who work with Apple can use, I think it's sapphire glass or something, which is both capacitive and transparent to touch. I don't know. Basically, you can use a material for the button that passes through the swipey gestures. So if you have cases with that kind of a thing, you can still use the camera control in the case. Turns out that at least if you use Apple's lanyard case, which is the only case I have because I don't really like cases, but I did want a lanyard. Yeah, absolutely true. The button works every bit as well for me through Apple's case as it does bare. And even more pleasing is that my capacitive touchscreen gloves also work with the capacitive camera control button, including with the case on. So when the weather is cold and I wear my capacitive gloves, touch, where I wear my capacitive gloves and I have the phone on a lanyard, the button still works. I can still do the swiping and stuff, which is great, because I had my fears about that. Nope, not a problem whatsoever. So yeah, it's pretty darn good actually. So yay, well done Apple. The second feature then is new to the 2017 models. So it's new to the, sorry, the 20, I don't know where I got 2017 from. New to the iPhone's 17, which is the 4X telephoto lens. And I'm just going to, again, not going to bury the lead. It's a game changer. That is an amazing upgrade. So for a little bit of context, the reason I changed phones the previous time I did change phones was because Apple added the 5X telephoto to the iPhone 15 Pro Max. So that's why I was an iPhone 15 Pro Max user, because that was the year Apple introduced their first periscoping telephoto lens. And, you know, it looked great on paper, but I'll be honest, I real life experience, it wasn't bad that the camera had the 5X telephoto. I did get a few genuine keepers with that lens, but a lot fewer than I'd hoped. So I think it's important to say up front that really, with the benefit of hindsight, the iPhone 15 Pro Max's telephoto was a disappointment. In the real world, it was just very clear that Apple were working at the very edge of their capabilities. And if I'm really being critical, I think they were working on the wrong side of that edge. They pushed things a little bit too far. They were a little bit out ahead of their skis. And that was a problem. The sensor behind that 5X telephoto on the iPhone 15 Pro Max was less capable than the sensor behind the primary lens on the iPhone 15. It had just a quarter as much resolution as the 1X sensor. And the strange thing is, 5X proves to be the opposite of a the porridge is just right sort of a number. It's both too hot and too cold. When a lot of the time, 5X is a little bit more zoom than you want. It's actually cutting things off too much, right? The 2X zoom is nowhere near enough and the 5X is too much. And when it isn't too much, it's nowhere near enough. Because if you need to zoom in so much that you actually want 5X, well, you don't actually want 5X. You want more than 5X. You want 6 or 7 or 8. And so in reality, it just fell between the stools all the time. I'd flip it to the 5X mode and go, no, that's too tight. I'm just going to have to shoot 2X and crop it in later. Or I'd zoom into 5X and go, yeah, not enough. Or, on the rare chances it actually was acceptable, it's like, okay, 5X actually isn't a bad fit here. The real world wouldn't be well enough lit. And the end result is that there wasn't enough signal-to-noise ratio. Now, physics was just against that 5X telephoto, because the physics of all zoom lenses is that the more you magnify, the dimmer the light gets. Because if you think about it, what you're doing is taking a small part of the real world and stretching it to be the full size of your photo. And the more you zoom in, the more you're stretching the real world. And there is so much light in the real world. So when you zoom out with a wide-angle lens, you're actually putting more light per pixel than the real world had. So you're sort of magnifying the real world's light on a per pixel level. And so wide angle lenses are amazing for astrophotography. And when you do the opposite, when you zoom in and you stretch the real world, well, you're dimming the amount of light each pixel sees. And so the signal to noise ratio goes the wrong way. So the physical act of zooming in 5 times means that you just have less light to work with. The sensor is already less resolution than the main sensor. So really, the laws of physics were just not going to help. And the end result was that the signal-to-noise ratio in that 5X camera was terrible. Now, the iPhone has extremely good machine learning-based image pipelines, which do an extremely good job of suppressing noise. So when the signal-to-noise ratio goes south, you don't see noise. What you see is the processing breaking down. So that amazing image pipeline runs a little over its skis, gets a little ahead of itself, and the end result is artifacting of various kinds. And I'd sort of describe it as cartoony looking. the detail evaporates and kind of gets replaced with estimated guessed detail, and it looks like a child drew it. You zoom, you swipe, you pinch to zoom, and the image just goes to weird, far too straight edges, and it just looks like a drawing instead of the real world. It's lost its detail. It hasn't gone noisy like snow. It's just ick. And it would happen a lot that I, you know, my expectation had been that the 5X would give me way better macros, because when I used to shoot with a big boy camera, I would very often, to get good macros of butterflies and other insects, step back, zoom in. Especially because nature didn't like you getting close, so step back, zoom in worked great. And so I was hoping that the 5X telephoto would let me get better macros, because I wouldn't have to shove the camera as close to the little bug and make the little bug cranky. And in reality, I tried, and it wasn't working for me because there wouldn't be enough light. And the butterfly would just have, they'd have a hand-drawn look instead of looking like a nice real butterfly. And I just, ick, I just didn't like it. So I wanted it to work for me, and it didn't. And then the fact that every time I found that I really did need the full 5X worth of zoom, it turns out I actually needed more, and the 5X wasn't enough. So it just didn't work for me. And the telephoto in the 16 Pro Max was mostly unchanged. So last year's phones, which did have camera control, didn't have a better telephoto. Had they had a better telephoto, I probably would have switched last year, even though I'd only just switched the year before. But, you know, a few weeks after the camera, after the iPhone's 16 came out, I asked a few people I trust, hey, is that telephoto any better? And the answer was universal. Nope. So, grand. I soon realized I had made the right choice in sticking with my 15 Pro for a second year. But this year, Apple did revise that telephoto big time. So they did stick with the tetraprism design, but they reduced the optimal zoom, optical zoom, from 5 to 4. And they quadrupled the sensor resolution, which means it now has enough pixels to make use of pixel binning. So the sensor behind that 4X telephoto is actually the same as the sensor behind the primary lens. So you now have more pixels per logical, sorry, more physical pixels per image pixel, and 2 years worth of evolution of sensor technology, and less stretching in the first place. So the signal to noise ratio is way better. The image processing pipeline has probably also improved over those 2 years. It's not like AI has been standing still. So the end result is that noise is not a problem for that 4X telephoto. And also, 4X is actually a more useful zoom level than 5X. A lot more of the world fits really nicely into a 4X frame, and it felt cramped or just cut off in the 5X frame. So actually, 4 was just a better number than 5 all along, and it took us having a 5 to realise that actually we wanted a 4. So I use that camera a lot. I use it for macros. I use it for just pulling things in a little bit closer and giving me a shallower depth of field. I just use it a lot. I use it about as much as I use the wide angle, and I love the wide angle. So that 4X telephoto is genuinely useful. And if that was the only thing that had happened, that'd be pretty good. In fact, I'd see it as a major upgrade. But it's not the only thing that happened. Because by having that sensor have all those extra pixels, it was possible to have an even stronger telephoto by using just the center part of the sensor without any pixel binning. So that's where the 8X telephoto comes in. So the 4X telephoto and the 8X telephoto share a physical lens and a physical sensor, but that's all of that sensor is used for the 4X telephoto with pixel binning. And this middle half of that sensor is used one physical pixel to one logical pixel for the 8X telephoto. So it does mean that noise is more of an issue because you no longer have the pixel binning. But you do actually still have 2 years worth of evolution of sensor quality and 2 years of evolution of image processing pipeline. So actually, the 8X has, at the very, very least, I am excruciatingly confident saying the noise is no worse than the 5X. So you now have 8X of zoom for the same quality you used to get 5X, which would already be amazing. But actually, I think that's overly conservative. The more I'm using this phone and the more I'm playing with that 8X telephoto, the more I'm realizing that I think it's not just as good as the 5X, but with all the extra reach, but it's better than the 5X with all that extra reach. And like I said, the biggest flaw I found with the 5X was that I usually want, if I really wanted 5, if 5 wasn't too much, it was too little. 8X turns out was way better. In fact, I do kind of like that they actually had to have a little viewfinder thing. So when you enable the 8X, you see a wider view as a thumbnail with the bit you're zoomed into as a, marked as a little square to help you find where in the real world you're pointed. Because 8X zoom is quite a lot for handheld. And yeah, it works. I don't use it nearly as much as the 4X, but it is genuinely useful. And I am finding that I was overly scared of using it because the 5 had been such a disappointment. And I'm now getting over that. I'm now remembering that it's probably better quality than I think. And I'm making myself use it a little more. And I'm continuing to be impressed. So maybe by the time we get to, you know, a year, 2 years down the road, I'll be telling you that actually I use the 8X telephoto a lot. Right now I don't use it a lot, but every time I do use it, I'm kind of going, huh, you're better than I thought. In fact, you're better than I thought you could be. So that's kind of pleasing. So I think sort of in summing up where I stand with this lens, I think the big sort of, yeah, the big takeaway, I think, the really the most fundamental takeaway is that the 5X was a poor choice by Apple 2 years ago, but they couldn't know that without trying it. And if you think about the way it worked with the 5X, your jumps were very big, right? You had, in terms of physical optical lenses, optical, you know, physical lenses, there were three of them. So you went 0.5 wide angle to 1X primary to 5X. Half, 1.5. That's a big jump. Now, the WASP crop sensor mode had been invented by then. So actually, if you include the crop sensor, your optical quality were 0.5, 1, 2, 5. But the jump from 2 to 5 is still bloody big. It's not actually very comfortable. But, you know, again, in hindsight, the camera I had, or the phone I had before the 15 Pro Max, it had 0.5, 1, 3 as the jumps. And that was pretty good. So 0.5, 1, 5 wasn't. It was a bad progression. But the progression we have now is, if you only take the fully optical quality, pixel binning and the whole works, is 0.5, 1, 4, which isn't bad. But if you realize that the crop modes are still optical quality, then you get 0.5, 1, 2, 4, 8. Well, that's a really nice progression. A, as someone who likes mathematical patterns, that doubling is very pleasing. 0.5 to 1 to 2 to 4 to 8, that's just pleasing anyway. But as a photographer, it's also pleasing because it turns out they're actually really nice jumps. So I never feel the need to go between zoom levels. And of course, my little camera control button only jumps to those levels. So I always go 0.5, 1, 2, 4, 8. And I actually very, very rarely use the two. I pretty much shoot the vast majority of my shots. No, not the vast. I think, I haven't done the math, but I think I use the primary, sort of the main camera, at least half the time, maybe 60% of the time. And then I use the wide angle quite a lot, so let's say another 20%. And nowadays I'm using the 4X quite a lot, so the other 20%. So I think it's 20% wide, 60% primary, 20% 4X. And there's rounding errors in there somewhere, which gives me the very odd time I do use the 2X, and never more than I realize the 8X. So yeah, it's just a better lens system. Apple have just massively perfected their physical lenses, which took them a little while to figure out, which is great. So, to sum things up, the actual fine-grained detail is going to be different from manufacturer to manufacturer, right? What it is that got so much better over 2 years will be different, but the pattern will be the same. Something about the camera will have gotten dramatically better over 2 years, which means the value you get from your camera will jump dramatically when you upgrade 2 or 3 years worth of improvement at once, because much to my surprise, this far into the camera phone's evolution, it's still evolving quite rapidly. At some point it will plateau and it will become like laptops, where the difference from 1 year to the next is minimal. But we ain't there yet. So I don't know how many more years we have of this rapid improvement, but we have a few more yet, because it is not leveling off in 2025. So, if your phone is 2, 3, 4 years old, maybe consider an upgrade. Because I think, as a photographer, you will genuinely enjoy the improvement. That brings us to the end of another Let's Talk Photography. As is the norm with these solo shows, there is an essay format of my same thoughts available at let's-talk.ie, so you can reread to get slightly better worded versions of what I just said to you, and you may find it useful to share with others who may prefer to read instead of to listen. So as I say, that's at let's-talk.ie, along with the support the show buttons. And notice you're at the end and you haven't heard an ad yet, and I can tell you that if you listen all the way to the end of the end of the end, you're still not going to have heard an ad, because there are no ads on this show. There are no sponsors in this show. This show is 100% listener supported, and that is a luxury for which I am eternally grateful to you all, the wonderful listening public. I can tell you my honest thoughts without having to worry about making advertisers cranky. I can also put all of my time and effort into content and zero of my time and effort into trying to find sponsors and ads, which means you get better content too. And it's just easier for you to listen to without all those bloody ads in the way. So every one of you who has ever supported this show in any way, thank you. If you would like to be someone who supports the show financially, then the two ways to do that are a one-off PayPal donation, which I use to make investments in things like software and hardware, or you can make a Patreon pledge for a certain amount every month, which is how I hope to cover all of my recurring bills. We're within the ballpark of breaking even. We're not actually breaking even, but we're within sight of breaking even. There's a little bit of reserve in the kitty. I'm not stressed, but it would be nice if, say, another 1 or 2% of you signed up. Just a few more, that's all we need, just a few more. I think we're 20 to 30 euro a month from breaking even. Not the end of, you know, like I say, not panicking, but if you happen to have a little bit of spare cash, you know, be nice. But do not put yourself under any financial pressure whatsoever for this pokey little podcast, because on the grand scale of things that are important in life, the universe and everything, this is very low down the list. So if you're in any way stressed financially, pretend I didn't even ask. What you can do, though, is help the show in a different way. Just spread the word. Tell people about it, post about it on social media. The bigger the audience, the more people there are to hear me ask for financial support, and the more financial support I will get. So by just spreading the word, you're actually supporting the show financially, believe it or not, indirectly. I should also mention something you may have noticed. I mentioned it on Let's Talk Apple, but I haven't mentioned it here yet. The podcasts have shiny new logos. And one of the biggest improvements in these shiny new logos is that the photography one and the Apple one don't look the same as each other anymore. They still look very obviously as, you know, part of the same network. They still look very obviously like my podcasts. The look of them is very much in keeping with the Bartificer logo and my entire brand. So they're obviously part of a stable, but they're very different. One of them's orange and one of them's green. So at least now you'll be able to tell which of my shows you have awaiting you. And I'm going to give a little hat tip here to a company who are very well known to the Mac community because they make great Mac apps. But they are also a design studio. And so the Icon Factory are actually the good people behind those logo redesigns. They were a joy to work with. Anthony, if you're listening, you were great fun to work with, because basically it wasn't just a case that I write a 5-sentence description of what I want and I get 5 options back and the bill. It was a much more collaborative process. Basically, they wanted me to give them a sort of a feel for me, a feel for the shows, a feel for what I wanted, to basically use lots and lots of different ways of describing the feel and what I was trying to achieve. And then they would come back to me regularly with sort of directions, and I could steer it. And so we very quickly began to hone in on a solution, because we didn't go all the way to here's your final logo. We went to here's what I'm thinking at the moment, here's the avenue I'm going down. And that was great, because it meant that there was no time wasted going down blind alleys, and it meant that I was absolutely certain that we were going to arrive at the end was going to be something I was really happy with, and that's exactly what happened. So we now have a suite of really nice logos. They're different than each other, and yet they're the same as each other. So the folks in the Icon Factory are amazing to work with if you need some design work done. So why not give them a go if you have some of that kind of work to do? All right, I've definitely prattled on long enough now, having given out an ad I haven't been paid for, I guess. Anyway, show notes, let's-talk.ie, support the show, let's-talk.ie. I've been your host, Bart Bouchotz. You can find me at bartb.ie. Anyway, until next time, happy snapping.